gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, P.J. Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Rich.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
The Houston Rockets are sliding and sliding bad. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. You can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, please subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher. Drop us a review, leave us some stars, share us all over social media. I would sincerely appreciate it. The Rockets are on a really rough 0-4 skid. And there's not one singular area that is the issue. And that's what makes it so difficult. Because it'd be great if you could point to one problem and say, oh, yeah, that's the problem right there. Let's fix that one thing. No, it's a bunch of different things. You can point to the slow starts and the lack of effort at the beginning of games. You can point to the defensive miscommunications. You can point to not having a cohesive roster with different guys missing different games. You can point to maybe the leadership of James Harden even. You can point to just the play of James Harden. And I'm not going to, this isn't, doesn't all rest on the shoulders of James Harden, unfortunately. A lot of it does, because there's issues surrounding the role players and them not playing to the best of their potential. And so I'll get into some of the reasons that I think that's happening. But first things first, I mean, we already know about the Clippers loss, but they come out Saturday afternoon, they play the Charlotte Hornets. They get down by as many as, what was it, 21? As many as 20, right? So the 0-20 start against the Hornets, which was just horrifying because it's the Hornets. And they wind up losing that game 108-99. So that was the third loss in a row. And then you have the, what should, honestly, the Hornets game should have been the bounce back, right? So you have the close game against the Knicks where you're just like, okay. You kind of scratch your head. You're like, well, they shouldn't have lost against the Knicks. But they fought back into it. They had a rough start. They weren't into it. The energy wasn't there. They fought back into it. Yeah, it sucks that you lost. Great, move on. Then you come out and you have the same lackluster start against the Clippers. And you think, okay, well, the Clippers are a really, really good team. Okay, you scratch your head again. You move on. So the Hornets should have been the bounce back game. Like, that should have been the game where you right the ship. And instead, you drop the Hornets game and you drop the Magic game. So you drop the Hornets on the road, you drop the Magic at home. And there's not a lot of bright spots in either of these games. The home game against the Magic, you drop 126-106. And the Magic led by as many as 32 in this one. The Rockets only ever led by 3. They never led against the Hornets. Like, this is not, this isn't even like the streak of losses earlier this season where there was concern, where you're wondering, okay, you know, what's going on with the team? No, this isn't even like that. This is a top to bottom issue, and that's why it's so hard to try and decide where does the blame fall. Does it fall on coaching? Does it fall on the players? Does it fall on the scheme? I think ultimately it does fall on the scheme a little bit. I think that small ball is finally taking its toll on the players. And I say that because it's tough to look at this lineup and think that it's easy to go out there and bang with the bigs as much as they do and be forced to play this high intensity, high effort required level of basketball for 48 minutes or even for 36 minutes to guarantee you a win, which is why we've seen them as the win streak progressed. We saw them have these slower starts to these games, and they still came away with that final win against Boston, which was win number 6 of the win streak. But they came out with so little energy from the jump, and that has me thinking that, okay, small ball works, but only to an extent. And this is why, not necessarily with, we'll use the Golden State Warriors as an example. Their small ball lineup was lethal, but there's a reason that they didn't run that small ball lineup 24/7 and trot it out all the time. They used it for high pressure moments, moments where they absolutely needed their best five on the court. And that's what they did. And so the Rockets, obviously their best five, I think it's easy to say it's the starting lineup. You can make the argument that you swap out Daniel House for one of possibly Austin Rivers or Eric Gordon or Ben McLemore, maybe. But I genuinely think that your best five is the starting lineup. And that being said, it's, again, tough to look at that starting lineup and expect them to do what needs to be done on a nightly basis. And so we saw small ball work. We saw it work for about 10-ish games or so. And then they lost their legs. They lost whatever confidence they had in the system. And then you lose a close one of the Knicks. You get demolished by the Clippers. And then by then, you're questioning everything. That's what Mike D'Antoni said. So now the team is questioning the system. They're questioning the scheme. They're questioning. They just don't have their confidence. And you're seeing it in every single one of the players. You're seeing guys pass up open shots. You're seeing guys second guess themselves on the court. And these issues offensively are then leading to issues defensively. Because if you're struggling on offense, and we'll hear from Jeff Green here in just a second coming up, because I think he put it very well. And I'll let him say it in just a moment, actually. So you know what? I'll stop rambling. We'll hear from Jeff Green coming up in just 1 second, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As promised, we will jump straight into the post-game audio from Jeff Green and then go from there.
To be honest with you, I think we just hit a rough patch. We were kind of relying on our offense, I think, a little bit too much. And then when that slides and we don't hone in on the defensive end and both of them are sliding, that's the result. We just got to get back to fundamentals. We got another game Tuesday. That's the greatest part about this. And we got to find a way to turn it around there.
So Jeff Green hits on what I think is kind of, it's obvious to some, although it's nice to see a player be this black and white about it. It's really cool to see a player legitimately say, look, we're relying on our offense too much. And we've known that. This is the Houston Rockets. This is a Mike D'Antoni-led team. Yeah, they probably rely on their offense a bit too much. So during the 6-game win streak, yeah, there were stretches where maybe necessarily the defense wasn't up to snuff or up to par. But offensively, they were hitting their shots. They were keeping things rolling because of their offense, with the exception of those final couple games in the win streak, even specifically Game 6, Boston on the road. They did not perform to the best of their abilities offensively in that game, and they were still able to scrape out a win because they won with defense. And I remember highlighting some of this. In that game, they were all over the basketball, and something has shifted, just the energy, the commitment level, whatever it may be. And again, that could be because of tired legs, that could be potentially because of chemistry behind the scenes. I don't know, unfortunately. But what's happened from that 6-game win streak into this 4-game losing streak, everything feels different. But it does compound the fact that if your offense starts to falter, then yeah, you're going to struggle defensively. Or maybe if your shots aren't falling offensively, then you get down on yourself. You start hanging your head emotionally on the defensive side of the basketball. Is that an excuse? No, it's not. You should try on both sides of the court, no matter how poorly it's going on one end or the other. Whether you're getting trampled while you're playing defense or whether you can't hit anything on offense, you still need to give it your best effort on the other side of the basketball. But I think a lot of this stems from the issues surrounding James Harden. And it's the offensive system. It's the system in place. And this is the frustrating part, is the system that D'Antoni has in place, which essentially gives free rein to James Harden and Russell Westbrook, works really, really well when they are working really, really well. But the moment they hit points where they're faltering, where they're having issues, where they're not playing at an insane superstar level, because that's what the system is built to do, it's built to maximize your two superstars. When they're not playing at their maximum capabilities, then suddenly the system looks very, very flawed. Because then it looks like you've just got a bunch of role players who are standing around waiting to shoot threes. There's not a lot of backdoor action. There's not a lot of cutting. There's not a lot of motion or movement headed towards the basket trying to get easy layups at the rim. And this doesn't even become an argument of, oh, we need more mid-range from James Harden, or, you know, I wish James Harden would play more like Russ. No, the offense just becomes predictable. And again, if you have offensive struggles, if you miss too many of your shots, if you're not putting the ball in the basket, then suddenly teams are going to get opportunities to get out and transition and to punish you. And I'm sorry, the Rockets are a bad transition defense team, but even less so than that, they're just bad at, they're bad at matching up defensively. I watch them get back and have defensive mismatches after a made basket throughout much of this season. And this is much less of an issue now that Clint Capela is gone and Robert Covington is in. But I can't count the number of times that the Rockets would make a basket this season and then still somehow manage to not match up properly. I'm talking like Clint Capela starts on the big, James Harden starts on whoever their, you know, least potent offensive player is, whatever it may be. Because even though you still plan on switching everything at some point defensively, there's no reason not to start up first on the matchup that makes sense. And they still do that sometimes. Like, James Harden will, after a made basket, just point towards the nearest player and say, okay, I got him. Like, and what is that? Those are defensive principles. Because you can't be telling me that it makes sense for James Harden to pick up the nearest big in transition. I mean, no, still let PJ Tucker guard, you know, whoever he needs to guard that makes sense matchup-wise. And again, yeah, you're going to switch everything, but at least for the first, 5 to 10 seconds of a possession, you're matched up with the person that hypothetically you should be matched up with. That's kind of a weird tangent, but that's just something that I've noticed. And that's kind of rooted back in, again, defensive principles. Does this team have them? I think that in these losses, after going back and watching some highlights from each of the individual losses, I went back to the Knicks game, started there, then the Clippers, then the Hornets, then the Magic. I had to kind of see it for myself again in slow motion, be able to pause it, be able to rewind, look at things. There was just so many defensive breakdowns and miscommunications on that side of the basketball that just shouldn't be happening. And you can make the argument that, okay, Jeff Green, Damari Carroll, when he does play, you know, those two guys are brand new in the system. And even just against the Orlando Magic, there were a couple possessions where Jeff Green, Damari Carroll, they had defensive miscommunications because they're not used to the switch everything scheme that the Rockets have. It's a tough system to get used to. We saw Russell Westbrook struggle for a chunk of the early season getting used to switching literally everything on the defensive side of the basketball. And we saw him get lost on multiple possessions and, you know, not jump to the wrong man suddenly. And it's worked itself out, the kinks with Russell Westbrook on the defensive side of the basketball for the most part to this point in the season. But they don't, Jeff Green and Damari Carroll don't get half a season. They don't get a half season to get used to the system. They need to be used to the system right now, which is a lot to expect from them. And then on top of that, Robert Covington, who's, I'll admit, has seemed rather at home in the Rockets system. Even he's had moments where, you know, he's faltered on a switch or whatever it may be. So they're not going to be a perfect defensive team. They're going to have issues. But even past the just miscommunication aspect of it, I think some parts of it are just maybe they're overcommitting on the drives. Like, I was watching in the Magic game, there were moments where the moment somebody started to drive, the help defender from the weak side would immediately cheat in towards the paint, and that's just a wide open three. Like, I don't know why the Rockets are committing so much help side or so much weak side defense to stopping the drives and then conceding wide open three-pointers. That doesn't make sense to me. And again, this all roots back to defensive scheme, what's their game plan. And I have another point that I want to make about this, so we'll do that in the final segment here coming up in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. And we are in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. So as I was wrapping up that second segment, I did say that I had one more point that I wanted to make about the defense, and that is this. I don't see, at least from the Rockets, the same level of what I believe to be defensive game planning that other teams seem to prepare in regards to us, in regards to the Rockets. Because it looks like against opposing teams, there's never a clear-cut, okay, this is our goal. We're going to concede the mid-range against this team because they're focusing on threes, or we're going to target this one player and, you know, let them shoot all the open shots because they're the worst three-point shooter on the team. It doesn't ever really feel like they have a game plan. When, as opposed to teams that guard the Rockets, they have game plans left and right, whether that game plan is to double-team James Harden, whether that game plan is to commit to everybody else and force Russell Westbrook to shoot wide-open threes, whether that game plan is to drop a big further back in the paint and tell everybody to stay at home on three-point shooters. Whatever it may be, it feels like the Rockets actually face legitimate defensive schemes on a nightly basis that are geared towards stopping their offense. Now, maybe that's because they're at the forefront of innovation, trying new things with small ball, and so teams are putting on their best game face when they're getting ready to play the Rockets so that, one, they don't get to be embarrassed by small ball, and then, two, maybe it's just become easy to game plan for, which I think is a legitimate argument to be made. And I was very vocal about this on Twitter, and I still feel this way, and I'll dive further into this branch of thinking in tomorrow's podcast, but I think that James Harden is not thriving in the five-out lineup the same way that Russell Westbrook is. I think that James Harden is missing the lob threat, and here's the thing, is we can point towards advanced stats, we can point towards the plus-minus numbers with James Harden and Clint Capella on the court versus when Capella's off the court, things like that, but something looks inherently different about this team and about James Harden specifically during this losing streak, but even less so during the losing streak. It even looked different during the winning streak. He just doesn't look like he's able to score as easy as he was before. And I think, and again, I don't want to dive too much into this one. One of the suggestions is just let James Harden have a pick and roll big during the minutes where Russell Westbrook sits. Bring Isaiah Hartenstein back up from the G League. I think that is a legitimate option. I think that's an option that should be entertained. Now, will they even bother entertaining it? I don't know at this point. But Mike D'Antoni is absolutely in the hot seat because there's no way that you lose to the Knicks, the Hornets, and the Magic while you are in the midst of ideally a deep playoff run, or, you know, what should be a deep playoff run for the expectations that we place on this team. There's no way that you get away with that and you're not somehow in the hot seat. I could even forgive the Rockets if they had actually scraped out the W against the Knicks and they still came out and got blown out of the water by the Clippers, and then they came out and took care of business against the Magic and against the Hornets. That would have been fine. Honestly, I would have been okay with that, because then you're looking at the Clippers and you think, okay, the Clippers are a clear notch ahead of the Rockets. That's not a team that you really want to match up with in the playoffs. This is the first look we got of, you know, Clippers small ball versus Rockets small ball, and it did not end well for the Rockets. Sure, you live with that because you're still hunting at that point for potentially the third seed. Maybe the Denver Nuggets still drop a couple games, whatever it may be. But instead, you drop all four games. And that's what's so peculiar about it, because there's not really a reason for it. There's just not. These are sub 500 teams that you have no business getting behind to so badly, so early. And I think a lot of it does root back to you need to have a big out there, partially because you can't rely on small ball for the entire 48 minutes because it will kill your legs. And then partially because I think that James Harden is at his best when he has a lob threat that he can use rolling to the basket. Because right now he's fallen in love with that three-point shot, and it's taking a lot of energy out of him to beat his defender off the dribble. And defenses are honing in on that. They understand that the Rockets shooters are not going to be cutting. So they're staying at home on shooters, but they're also cheating over and making it really hard for James Harden to drive in. Because there's almost always one other shooter that you can cheat off of completely in Russell Westbrook for about 35 to 36 minutes off the court. So all you have to do, cheat off Westbrook. That's the help defender to help guard James Harden's drives, and he doesn't have a lob threat anymore. So all of this is making it really easy for opposing teams to game plan for the Houston Rockets. And past that, they're getting destroyed on the boards. And this will be my final point headed into what'll be the end of this podcast, is that, and I didn't focus too much on the specifics from the Magic game and from the Hornets game, mainly because it's a lot of the same of what we've been seeing, but it's a complete meltdown is what it is. And there's very little to pick apart from either side that is even a silver lining. I guess I'll say Jeff Green is a bit of a silver lining in these games. He's been the one consistent good player across both games, I believe. And to see him kind of thriving in his backup five role, granted it's a small ball five, but to see him kind of thriving in that role bodes well, because then you think, okay, if he can do well in spurts there, and if PJ Tucker can continue to hold down the fort, then some combination of those two guys plus a legitimate big and Isaiah Hartenstein for 15 to 20 minutes a game, those three guys should be able to hold down the five spot for the Rockets. And just having another big out there to help absorb some of the rebounds, to help fight with the opposing bigs, that would be huge. But I like what I'm seeing out of Jeff Green, you know, and maybe he'll come out against the Timberwolves Tuesday night and lay a goose egg because there's some inconsistencies there. But seeing, you know, his ability to facilitate a bit on the court, he didn't rack up any assists against the Magic, but just watching him handle the basketball, he feels competent in his driving ability, getting out in transition, and as a roller. And I think that's the important part, is setting picks for James Harden, Russell Westbrook, whoever it may be. Jeff Green is a competent roller. He can finish at the rim with ease. He doesn't have to get all the way to the rim before you pass him the ball. He's very capable of continuing the drive himself once the defenders are displaced by the initial pick and roll action. So I like Jeff Green in that role, and I think he is pretty much my only bright spot from either of the two games this past weekend. But the point that I want to wrap up on is the rebounding issue, right? And I actually spent a chunk of time searching for this stat, and I couldn't find it, and I'm determined to find it, so I hope it exists somewhere, I really do. But, and I know it exists, I know it's tracked, because they flash it at home games all the time. The overall time of possession for teams that the Rockets have played. Now, I'm not talking time of possession, you know, per 24-second shot clock, no. I want to know the overall time of possession in the game, and the reason I want to know the time of possession and not just raw number of possessions is because I'm fully convinced that since going down to small ball, fully committing to it, that the Rockets, by getting bludgeoned on the rebound or in the rebounding battle, they are spending significantly more time playing defense than they are playing offense. And this is, again, completely eye test right now because I couldn't find a stat to back me up on this. But it's like football, right? It's time spent on the field. If you keep your defense on the field for a prolonged period of time because they just cannot get a stop, they will eventually get gassed and start to underperform as the game progresses. So in the Rockets' case, if you are getting destroyed in the rebounding department, if you're giving up 10-plus offensive rebounds per game, then opposing teams are then getting multiple opportunities to reset and continue to play offense against you. Now, in the grand scheme of the game, this might only equate to a total of a few minutes here or there, but you're not doing yourselves favors by having to continually rely on what is not a strong part of your game by playing defense. That is not a strong part of the Rockets' identity. So if you're just going to concede the rebounding battle and be content with that, having to bang with other bigs and then lose out on the offensive rebound and then be forced to reset once, twice, three times within a given shot clock and have to play defense every single time, I feel like that's going to wear on you throughout the course of a game. And that, again, this is just eye test, but against the Magic, the Magic had 13 offensive rebounds. The Hornets only had 6 offensive rebounds, but the Hornets didn't even feel like they needed to destroy the Rockets in the rebounding battle. In fact, they didn't destroy the Rockets in the rebounding battle. The Rockets out-rebounded the Hornets in this one. I apologize. So even in that one, it wasn't even necessarily the rebounding battle, but I think that that is a big part of what's been ailing this team. And that's not going to be fixed just by playing Isaiah Hartenstein for 15, 20 minutes a night, but it's a start. And I think they've got to just pinpoint something that they can change, something that they can do differently and start from there and start small. Because small ball isn't, I don't want to say it's exposed because it does work, but I don't think it can be the go-to plan. And I think that's what we're slowly learning through the course of this 4-game losing streak is that you can't commit to small ball full time. Even if the Golden State Warriors, one of the greatest teams ever assembled, didn't commit to small ball full time, even though that was the best roster that they could trot out on the court, there's a reason for it. It should be used in high pressure situations where you need the best possible lineup you can put on the court for a spurt of 5 to 10 minutes per game. And maybe the Rockets, it's too late for them to do that because maybe Mike D'Antoni will refuse to start Isaiah Hartenstein or to even use him for 10 or 15 minutes a game. But I think that there would be a lot of benefits to maybe not even starting Hartenstein. Maybe you still start the small ball. You bring Hartenstein off the bench for Russell Westbrook. That's his substitution because then you get James Harden a big that he can use in pick and roll. You keep the spacing optimal for Russell Westbrook while he's on the court. And that would just make a lot of sense to me. But I'll dive further into that later, not later this evening, I should say, in tomorrow's podcast, which I will record later this evening. But I'll get to that and kind of pick apart some numbers there and decide, you know, kind of how I feel moving into that one, do a little bit more film study, kind of look at some of the, I didn't get a chance to look at as many of the wins that I wanted to. I did touch back on the Boston Celtics win, the second one, but didn't get to look at the rest of the win streak because I do want to try and spot some differences in how the team has played. But I do think it just comes back to small ball isn't sustainable over a long period of time. And I think that's my main takeaway right now about how this team is playing. And it would be a little bit different if James Harden wasn't in as much of a funk as he is in, or maybe if Russell Westbrook didn't have 8 turnovers against the Magic. You know, there's a lot of different things where they're not doing themselves any favors whatsoever. But moving forward, something has to change. And whether that's a lineup change, whether that's a schematic change, whether that's a coaching change, whatever that may be, something is going to change. With that, I think that's where we'll wrap up today's episode. Now do me a favor, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. And as always, we look forward to having you back here very soon at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.